Welcome to Uncle Bob's Magic Cabinet, a mother-daughter podcast about all things magic and mythology and pop culture.
Daughter.
I'm Lori, I'm the mom.
What's going on?
What's happening?
I don't know. Hey. We added a lava lamp to the set right behind you.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful.
It is
I love a lava lamp.
We didn't turn it on in time though.
It is looking a little flaccid. Like it's not like the lava isn't going. So it's just kind of like there.
It's just there. Yeah.
We have to remember it takes a few hours to boot up.
Yes. Yes. You know, but sometimes I'm like, I got to turn that off at night because.
Why? Is it too bright?
Well, no. I'm really just afraid it's going to like torch the place.
Oh my God. You know what? It is a little bit. I do feel as though they may be a fire hazard, but good vibe setter. I want one of those ones that's
keep an
like
eye on
neon
it.
Pink and purple.
Oh,
I want one of those. I feel like we had one of those when I was little.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want it back. If anyone has.
I don't know where the hell it went.
But this one's like multicolor. You know what? Mm-hmm. Wait, this is really in theme with our topic today.
Ooh,
and I didn't even mean for
wow.
it to be. Okay, that leads me to our intro topic,
yes.
which is very exciting.
Is it?
Yeah, so my movie choice today, mm-hmm. I'm really excited we can get back into movies.
Yeah,
so
oh my
fucking
gosh,
excited. Okay.
So exciting. And I did not know how to behave while I was doing my research.
You know what?
Like,
it felt very weird because we haven't followed our like old format. Not really in a while.
In
it was
months.
Like coming home.
I know.
Oh my God.
Like riding a bike.
I know. It did take a minute though.
Yeah,
I was like, wait,
if I
what
could
do
ride
I do?
A bike. It's been so long.
I hate
think
to
of
say
that
no. I hate to say no. Can I tell
but
you
I'm
something?
So clumsy.
Can I tell you something that's
what?
Really funny?
What?
Okay, so the Pittsburgh Film whatever was like, I put out this call for background actors for some movie. And
okay.
I was like, ooh, okay, that sounds fun.
Oh my God.
I was like, let me sign us up.
Oh no.
And so I'm like halfway through the application. It's going good. And then it gets to the question, do you have a bicycle? And can you ride a bicycle? And I was like, ooh.
I'm out.
I literally just exited out of the application.
Were you?
I was like, me and you on a bike. No.
We would be not, a bicycle build for
we would,
two.
We would steal the show.
What about a unicycle?
Us
oh my
in
gosh.
The background trying to ride a bike in talk like a serious film.
Talk about a horror movie trying to ride like one of those unicycles.
Oh my God.
Terrifying.
A two-person bike. We really should do that. Someone get us one of those immediately.
A bicycle built for two. Then we could sing it as we're
okay.
Going
yes. Cute.
That would probably be hysterical.
Laura's really liking this idea. Okay. So that aside from the bicycle, back to the color.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my topic today is a Wes Anderson film. And I think this is the first Wes Anderson film we've done because in all honesty, I am not like, I think this may be the first Wes Anderson movie I've even seen.
Oh, really?
Like, I am not really familiar with his movies
done.
A lot.
Oh, really?
A lot. And they're
like that Steven Spielberg guy.
I think, yeah, this is, we're entering that zone of us just being fucking clueless. Like, I know who he is, but I don't think I've like really dived into his catalog. And now I want to. I started here because, you know, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
But Wes Anderson is known for color, partially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his color palettes
beautiful
are just fucking stunning.
Yeah.
And you know, I appreciate that. So it got me thinking, what's our color palette?
Yeah.
Like to our listeners, like not what we would choose.
What we would choose.
Yeah. Because as someone who really loves color, if I had to stop and think about my own color palette,
only black.
I like kind of go blank. I'm like, I don't fucking know. So I was like, ooh, let's ask our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So I put on Instagram, if you had to create a color palette for Lore, Lee and Fact Check Jake.
Yeah.
What would it be?
And we got some really cool answers.
You guys like really participated.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yay.
And that was so cool. We got so many responses and it was so interesting because they were all so similar.
I know.
And that makes me feel really cool. Like our listeners really know us.
Yeah.
And you like taught me about us.
Yeah.
That was super cool.
I know.
And B, like, I love when you guys participate.
Oh, it's so nice.
It's just really cool.
Somebody's out there.
Yeah, it does, you know, help us feel like we're not talking into a void. Okay, so here are the color palettes that you all chose for us. This is not what we chose. This is what you chose. So I gave us all a power color, like the color most people said.
Yeah.
And then common words, because you all got really descriptive.
I know.
Holy shit. You all are smart and cool. I was like the words you use to describe these colors. I was like, fuck yes.
I am very smart.
Scholarly. Okay. Here's Laura's power color.
Ooh.
Sage green.
Ew.
That is the color that popped up the most. And that is not surprising to me. You're very sage green.
Yes. That I resonate with. Yes.
Do you? Yes. Okay.
I'm holding my sage green mug right
cutie.
Here.
Okay, mm-hmm. Common words. Soft, earthy, cozy, and natural. Mm. Oh my gosh, you know what? Grandma Nut, come on over here. Grandma Nut energy is strong. So you had a lot of neutral earth tones.
Uh-huh.
Lavender or pale blue
came
up a lot. Yeah. Lots of browns.
Yes.
Like shades of browns and orangey browns.
Yeah, like I'm rolling in the forest.
Like you're rolling in the forest. Mossy came up
a
lot.
I love that. That was my favorite. Mossy.
Pretty much like animos, pretty much every shade of like natural green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My favorite.
Again, like terracotta orange came up.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And light gray or silver, which I think is so
pretty.
Cute. Laura, that's a beautiful color palette.
It is. Oh my God.
I think you nailed it.
Perfect.
I feel like yours was the most cohesive. Like everyone pretty much said the same thing.
The same colors for me.
Yes.
Oh,
super
I love
cute.
That.
And it's cute because I would give October pretty much the
similar.
Same. It's interesting because October's color palette is kind of like a mashup of all three of ours.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting.
That's so fun.
Okay. So mine, my power color, the color you said the most was lime green.
Ooh.
And that is fun. I don't think I would have picked that, but it makes total sense.
That.
A few people specifically said Nickelodeon slime green.
I love that.
That's the vibe I give off. I am so happy about
you should
that.
Be
I'm
happy
so
about
proud
that.
Of myself.
That's
oh my God.
Awesome.
I'm gonna cry. You understand me. Common words for me were dark, deep, electric, and warm. That's very fun. So it's interesting because I got like an equal mix of jewel tones, which is very beautiful. I love that. And neons.
Yeah.
So kind of like the opposite.
You're deep and bright.
So you're seeing that I am once again filling that, you know, bisexual, bipolar. I'm just like, I'm living in the extremes. You know what I mean?
Two ends of the spectrum.
I like to live on both ends of the spectrum, all ends of the spectrum.
Oh my goodness.
So I got a lot of like midnight purple, a lot of black, or like dark colors.
Mm-hmm.
So dark, they're almost black.
Scarlet red.
Yeah, scarlet red, ruby red.
Yeah.
Teal came up a lot, which
I like that.
I don't think I would have picked that for myself, but it makes
sense.
But
that's interesting because you keep asking me what color I think your hair should be.
You do.
And I
keep saying teal. Yeah. So I just dyed my hair. You can't see it because I have my hat on. I just dyed my hair like a purpley pink, which some people threw pink in there. And I was like, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, you keep telling me that I am
teal.
A like bluish green person.
Mm-hmm.
And then people said lime green.
Yeah, that's
I did
fun.
Love my lime green hair.
I loved it.
Take me back. I got stormy blue a lot. And a lot of people simply said the color of Halloween. So like purple, orange, and green.
Love it.
Which is the cutest thing
that
I've ever heard
adorable.
In my life. Oh my gosh.
I
thank you for that color palette. I am
love
honored.
That. I love that.
Fact Check Jake's was also really cool. It was like moody.
Oh.
And like kind of mysterious, which I like
stormy
for him.
Weather.
So his power color was deep blue. Like he got pretty much every shade of like darker blue. Denim blue, ocean blue.
Yeah.
Yes. His common words were rich, earthy, smoky, and bright.
How
oh my
fun.
Gosh. So he got a lot of dark forest greens, every shade of blue again, lots of browns like you. So he had more of like earthy.
Yeah.
You two shared that.
We do share that.
He also got purple and lavender. So if you said purple for Jake,
I was going to say, I see him as purple.
Yeah, but you really hit something that like, I feel like people who only know him intimately would pick up on. So if you picked up on the purple, like, way to go. Yes. I feel like you were really tapped into Fact Check Jake.
Yeah.
And a lot of people also said the colors of summer.
For my Fact Check Jake?
Yes.
Oh, fun.
And I do love that because he's born in June. Yes. So he does love like the beach and the sun. And so, oh my God.
Yeah, that's so cute.
I love that.
And then you can dive deeper and like look at the chakra.
Yeah. You know? So then some people thought we were going to do a lesson on auras. And that's why I was asking. We're not. It's just because of the Wes Anderson color tie in. But this is going to, this is like a nice segue.
Yeah.
Because then after I asked for ours, I asked for yours. Mm-hmm. And it was cool because a lot of people seem to struggle. They were like, oh my God, I don't know, is what they wrote. And I said, see, it's harder to like pick up on your own.
Your own, yeah.
But you had a lot of earthy tones. Like a lot of people said color palette similar to yours. Yeah. So we've got a little crunchy audience.
Nice.
Oh my God.
I love it.
That was a really cool exercise.
That is cool.
I live for stuff like this.
You know?
Thank you for...
we're always learning. The more you know.
The more you know. I am going to put together like, I don't know, a little visual of the color palettes you gave us and maybe put it on Instagram or something because that's just very exciting to me. Okay, that's it for the intro. Go check out our Patreon.
Do it.
Hey, we have Full Moon Film Club coming up.
It's so fun.
Next week. If you don't know, every month around the full moon for the $10 and up tiers on our Patreon, we gather on Zoom and someone picks a movie and then they like lead a discussion about the movie. We all watch it beforehand or not. If you just want to like hang out and learn some cool things.
Yeah.
There's normally a theme, like a drink theme,
an outfit.
And we just talk and hang out and it's really cool. It's like super a book club, but with movies.
I love it.
This next one is being led by our patron Artemis.
Yeah.
And they chose Adam's Family Values.
I love that.
Which
I'm
is
so
such
excited.
A fucking good choice, especially for this time of year. So go join.
Oh, I love it.
And also rate us on Spotify and Apple.
Please.
Please and thank you.
Yes.
Are you ready to get into it?
I'm so ready. I'm excited.
Okay. So like I said, my topic is Fantastic Mr. Fox, which has been recommended so many times.
Really?
And I'm not going to lie. I was like apprehensive to do it because I had never seen it.
Yeah.
And that's very weird for me because I love Roald Dahl.
He's your favorite. Yeah.
If you don't know, this is based on the 1970 novel of the same name by Roald Dahl, but it was never my favorite Dahl book. Like I think I may have only read it once.
Really?
I was more like the Matilda. Yeah.
I wasn't
and
familiar.
Willy Wonka.
Correct. Yeah. But and James and the Giant Peach.
I loved,
love it.
Loved that Giant Peach. Every year. TM. I always want to do that. And I feel like it's a summer movie and I always forget to do it in the summer.
Peaches.
So with
peaches.
Going to the country, gonna eat a lot of peaches. Can someone please remind me to do that movie come summer? Thank you. Okay, so I am glad I did this though, because this movie is pretty fucking magical and fantastic. So this is a 2009 stop motion animated.
Yay!
You know that's my fucking favorite.
Yep.
Fantasy comedy film, rated PG. So this one's good for everyone,
for
I will say.
All-inclusive.
All-inclusive. Here's your tagline.
Okay, cool.
Forget super. Ignore incredible. It's all about fantastic.
Ooh.
And you know what? I'm going to give that a 10 out of 10 because it's like a slight roast. If you think about it, ignore incredible. I'm sure the movie The Incredibles came out around the same time.
Ooh.
And forget super. Superman.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. A little bit of a roast in there. 10 out of 10. written for the screen by Noah Baumbach. I hope I said that right.
I hope you said that right.
And, probably not. And Wes Anderson.
You're like, Baumbach.
I said it with confidence,
though. I'm a bombardier.
You know what? That was really great. I don't know what that was, but I liked the energy.
Bombardier.
Okay. Enough.
I'm gonna be saying that all day in my head.
I know. And Wes Anderson. Okay. And directed by Wes Anderson.
Cool.
And you know what? I get it. I get the hype.
Got it.
Visually, if you are into stunning visuals, you're going to like Wes Anderson. Here's your voice cast.
Let's do it.
George Clooney is Mr. Fox.
As soon as I heard it.
Underrated voice actor.
Yep.
Holy
yep.
shit. And you know what? Underrated comedian. He is so funny.
He's funny.
And he is funny in this. And I think that he was the perfect voice for this character.
Yeah.
You have Meryl Streep as Mrs. Fox. 10
Meryl?
Out of 10. Love Meryl. Hey, we just talked about Meryl.
We just talked about
she
Meryl.
She just roasted the shit out of Disney just like you did. Make sure you check out the roast of Walt. Jason Schwartzman as Ash. He's funny. Eric Chase Anderson as Christofferson. And yes, I do believe that was a nod to Chris Christoph. Chris. Say that 10 times fast.
Does he sing country tunes?
Christofferson. No, I don't know. I think they just like the name. It is a pretty sick name. Wally Walidarsky. Love that. Oh, as Kylie.
Wally Walidarsky.
Willem Dafoe as Rat.
Willem.
And you know what? Willem Dafoe, he is great, isn't he?
Love him.
He really does bring a certain spice to the mix.
He sure does.
Michael Gambon as Franklin Bean. Aww. You do like him, don't you?
Yes. I think he just passed away, right?
Oh, shit. Did he? R.I.P. Rest in peace, pal. I did not know.
R.I.P. Yeah.
Owen Wilson as Coach Skip.
Owen.
And I think that him and Wes Anderson work together BFFs. Often. Maybe they're pals. I don't know. And Bill Murray as Badger. And you know what? What?
Bill
you,
Murray.
You love the Bill. And you know what? He is funny.
A character.
He is a character. And I also liked him in the, like, a voice role. It was very fitting. Jake's like, who is that? I was like, give it a second. And he's like, it's Bill Murray. I loved it. Okay, here's your rundown.
Okay.
We open with Mr. and Mrs. Fox, who are preparing to raid a bird farm, despite Mrs. Fox feeling under the weather because, spoiler alert, she's pregnant.
Uh-oh.
Oh my gosh. So when the two get caught up in a fox trap, Mrs. Fox tells her hubby it's time to find a new career path. She's like, if we get out of this, you're done. You're done.
No more stealing chickens.
No. Cut to 2 years later. 12 in Fox years. That's a cute little detail.
That is cute.
Mr. and Mrs. Fox are living in a crusty hole. Ew. Crusty hole TM.
Crusty fox hole.
New band name called it. With their son, Ash. Okay, they're poor, and Mr. Fox is slowly dying inside as a newspaper columnist. He wants to be out living on the fucking wild side, okay? He doesn't want to be doing the boring and mundane.
Right.
He wants some cash.
Yeah.
Let me put it. He's like, this is fucking for the birds.
Cash for
I'm
Ash.
I'm living in a fucking crusty hole. Get me out of here. So Mr. Fox decides to move his family to a posh little tree above ground where they belong, according to Papa. Uh-huh. And the wife is like, you do know that foxes live in holes for That's a reason, right. motherfucker. Right, right. So despite warnings of the neighborhood being dangerous for their species, they move on in. Why is it dangerous, you ask?
Why?
First of all, they're above ground.
That's right.
Never good. Never just stay under there. But three of the meanest, nastiest, and ugliest farmers around.
Yikes.
Bogus, Buncey, and Bean. Bogus, Buncey, and Bean. I hope I said that right.
Buncey owns a Bunsen burner.
Okay. Buncey, the maker of Bunsen burners. and Francis Bean.
Francis Bean.
So they each have their facilities in the vicinity.
Right.
You look out the window of Fox's new treehouse and you see
some factories.
Yeah, and it's not cute. So we have Bogus, the chicken farmer who seems to only eat large amounts of chicken.
Yikes.
Like he eats a lot of chicken. I found it offensive. When they were describing it, I was like, that makes me feel icky. I'm one of those people that I get like two bites into chicken and I start feeling real weird. Or like an egg. If I become aware of the fact that I'm eating,
I can't
get
do
real
it.
Freaked
I know.
Out. Yeah. So this scene, I was like,
you're like, push your plate away. Yeah.
Then we have Buncey, the short-sized duck and goose farmer. And then we have Bean, the turkey and apple farmer who lives on a diet of potent alcoholic cider.
Sign me up. I'm moving over there.
Me, according to that one person who wrote a review. Anyway,
you lush.
The local human children even made up a rhyme to demonstrate just how nasty these three are. Bogus, Buncey, and Bean. One fat, one short, one lean. These horrible crooks, so different in looks, were nonetheless equally mean.
Ooh,
you know what? That's a catchy little ditty.
That's enough to say, no, I don't want to live here.
I don't want to fucking live here. That has that doll flair to it.
Yes, it does.
So Mr. Fox pays this all no mind because, again, he just wants out of the crusty hole. And the fam is enjoying life in their new tree. But Mr. Fox's wild and crazy days simply keep calling to him. He can't let go of those glory days. He is very much giving Billy in St. Elmo's fire. Like, let it go, pal.
Does he pull out a sack?
He pulls out the sack.
Does he have a dangly earring?
He's trying to hang out. You know what I mean? He's trying to hang out back at the college when he's already graduated. Give it up, Mr. Fox. It's embarrassing. But Mr. Fox comes up with a plan. Uh-huh. Okay, let's start stealing from these three horrible douchebag farmers. He sees a challenge.
It's like a Robin Hood accepted. Complex.
Yes.
Right.
And Mr. Fox does just that with his possum sidekick at his side. Love the possum sidekick. Yeah. Cute. Starting with the bogus chicken farm, then moving to Buncey's smokehouse, then to Bean's cider cellar, all without telling Mrs. Fox. Because remember, she said, give it up, pal.
That's right.
These raids have obviously caught the attention of the nasty farmers. They're not happy about this. And they immediately decide to hide outside of Mr. Fox's treehouse and kill him.
Yikes.
It goes from 0 to 100 real quick. They're like, oh, my money is interrupted. We're just going to fucking take this guy out. So bogus Buncey and Bean are almost successful in their quest to kill Mr. Fox, but he escapes with a completely shot off tail.
Uh-oh.
This is like a funny little detail. So for the rest of the movie, he's like missing his tail.
I know. Aren't fox tails like hot commodities, right?
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. At one point, someone wears it as a tie. Oops. So like, yeah, it's fucked up, but it is also kind of funny. Rest in peace to the tail.
R.I.P.
Okay, now the war is on. The Fox fam digs an escape tunnel and hides out down below where they should have stayed. Mm-hmm, okay, you see? You see? Listen to Mrs. Fox. There they run into some other furry creatures and they all kind of like band together. It's cute. The three farmers camp up outside of the Fox family tree with scary looking machines, et cetera.
Knowing they got to come up sometime.
Yeah, they're trying to wait the animals out. Okay, and it's not looking good for our furry friends because they're running out of provisions. Okay, but have no fear. Fantastic Mr. Fox has another plan.
Awesome.
And he does make a little speech at one point that's very cute about how he finds the need to like be fantastic all the time. And it's, I did make me cry.
Did you?
Yeah. I hate when I cry in an animated film. I feel like it just shows my weak spot. I'm like, fuck, I can't even make it through an animated film. But sometimes those are the worst.
I know, because you're not expecting it.
You're not expecting it.
It's like, this is lighthearted.
I thought this was going to be jolly.
This is lighthearted and fun.
And I'm like, oh.
And it is for children.
Right.
Until you become jaded and older.
Give it a few years, friends.
And then it hits you right where it hurts.
You'll never recover. Okay, so Mr. Fox's new plan. Dig under and up into each farm and raid it while the farmers are all distracted trying to wake them out.
Okay,
so with that, the underground animals are now like living large.
Oh, wow.
It's really funny. They have like a chef. They have fancy meals, some posh decor, fine wool suits.
Nice.
Very cute. So from here on out, it's like a cat and mouse game.
Yeah.
Okay, one group strikes, the other retaliates, etc. There's a lot of cute scenes.
Yeah.
At one point, they're like flushed out of their hole.
Right.
Okay.
Their hole.
Take a drink every time I say hole. Extra points if I say crusty. Extra shots. But at one point, they're flushed out.
Not Courtney loves hole either.
Okay. You love a hole joke. they're flushed out by cider and the scene of them like flying through the tubes or whatever. Hole is very funny and
very
cute.
Augustus Gloopy.
Yeah, but also very Wes Anderson. Like, I do like the animation style. But they keep kind of fighting each other until Mrs. Fox's little nephew, Christofferson, is captured by the farmers.
Oh, no.
Okay, so with that, Mr. Fox and the rest of the animal crew organize like a white flag exchange meetup with the ship bags. But of course, the backstabbing farmers don't plan on actually honoring the agreement. So before they can ambush the animals, our gang counterattacks. And the war pops off.
Nice.
Long story short, the Fox crew rescues Christofferson and escapes back to the underground sewers, which they've now made like a cozy little network of animal homes. I was like, wait,
it's
why?
A community.
I was like, why does that look cozy and fun? I kind of want to go.
Leanne's like, I want to live there.
Cowboy, take me away. I want to go. The three farmers stay obsessed, okay, and camp out next to a manhole cover, hoping that Mr. Fox will show himself eventually. Just showing that, again, let it go.
Yeah.
But our animals are too busy celebrating because they stumbled upon a supermarket that happens to sit right above their new sewer palace.
Nice.
So they'll be eating good-ish for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll have all the provisions they
need.
All
the provisions. And here's the kicker. The supermarket is owned by bogus Buncey and Bean. So the foxes get the last laugh after all.
I love it.
Mrs. Fox adds to the excitement by announcing that she's pregnant and the gang toasts some juice boxes to their new survival. Love a juice box. And they celebrate with a little grocery store dance party.
Was it a Capri Sun?
You know what? It would have been. I like the honest juice boxes.
The honest juice boxes, yeah.
And grape, grape. I love a grape flavored juice box.
Grape.
That's what I call grapes, and Jake thinks it's funny, so I keep saying it. And that's the end of the film.
Love it.
This is such a good November watch because the color palette is so beautiful. Warm and cozy. Yeah. And like, I don't know, the fox energy is just very autumnal. I loved it. 10 out of 10.
Oh, so nice.
For this being my first like introduction kind of to Wes Anderson, I loved it. I want to see more.
Nice.
As a lover of like color, you kind of had me right out of the gate. So what's my lesson?
What is it?
It's the fox.
Ooh, it that's was awesome.
Yeah, because the movie itself wasn't like magical, so to say. They were just kind of talking animals. Mm-hmm. But the fox had some interesting stuff to it. The and again, it felt very magical. Like November, so let's talk about it.
Let's do it.
Okay, so when people ask the director about his inspiration for this movie, besides Roald Dahl's book, obviously, Wes Anderson often references the 1937 stop-motion film Le Roman de Renard. I'm going to say all these words wrong. I am so sorry.
I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It translates to The Tale of the Fox.
Ooh.
So this movie tells the story of Reynard. I know I'm... That doesn't sound right. Reynard?
Maynard. Spider caught a fly.
Renard? I think it's probably Renard.
Okay.
I'm going to say
go with your gut. Go with your gut. Go with your gut.
The story of Renard the Fox, an anthropomorphic red fox or trickster that dates back to European medieval folklore.
Ooh.
You talked about anthropomorphism.
Yes.
When?
Howard the Duck. Thank
See,
you.
We find a gem in every movie.
And that is magical.
It is magical. All the characters from these tales are anthropomorphic animals. They're really challenging me with that word. I can't say it. And Renard's number one enemy is Isengrim, the wolf, known for his greed. So you can kind of see a connection to Fantastic Mr. Fox. The original Renard, the fox tales, were written in Old French, but the stories come from all over Europe.
Nice.
And they have now been translated into many languages.
Cool.
Yeah, and they will include like details specific to the area they come from.
That's neat.
Of course, I love it. These stories were so popular that the lead character's name does replace or often replaces the French word for fox.
Oh.
So like Renard.
Yeah.
Isn't that neat?
That is interesting.
Okay, fun. So it's not really surprising that tons, and I mean tons, of cultures have myths and folklore focusing on the fox.
So fun.
And it almost always takes the form of a trickster. It does fit this kind of archetype. Yes. Yeah, probably connected to that.
Didn't we say that he was the, we just talked about him being the god of, I think, Samhain or something. I can't remember.
You know,
I don't know.
It all blends together at some point, but I do find it fitting for this time of year because it does.
Yeah.
I would definitely put this movie in the Sagittarius pile.
Yeah,
but it does have that because this trickster energy has that back and forth. It has that Scorpio feel too. So very cool. We've all heard the phrases sly as a fox, crazy like a fox. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they do live up to these names in their folklore.
Okay.
So the legends vary, but the fox's cunning, adaptable, and mischievous nature remains consistent. Cute.
I love that.
So let's burn through a few examples to make sure we give some flowers.
Okay.
East Asian folklore is packed full of stories featuring foxes.
Okay.
Japan has the Kitsune.
Oh, nice.
China has the Hulujing, and Korea has the Kumiho.
Oh, wow. I'm
sorry if I mispronounced any of that.
You did phenomenal.
Thank you. And according to legend, all of these foxes had the magical ability to shapeshift into human form. So that seems to be a common.
Interesting.
Which goes along with the trickster.
Yeah.
Interestingly, a few of these separate cultures' legends each tell the story of a super powerful nine-tailed fox.
Nine-tailed.
Back to the tails. And this pops up in pop culture a lot. Okay.
It was wonder made if that's where their power is held.
In the tail.
Ooh.
I'm sure we could go into that specifically. Ooh, wait, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
This was made most famous by the anime Naruto.
Okay.
Okay. And OG Pokemon fans know that the tiny little fox like Vulpix eventually evolves into nine tails.
Oh,
so you'll see that.
Okay.
Which I love.
Interesting.
Ooh,
yeah.
Let's talk about the magic of the
we
tail.
We should.
The magic of the tail.
Yeah.
Okay. In Finland, we have Tulukitu or the fire fox.
Oh. Mm,
a personification of the northern lights. Someone asked us to talk about the northern lights, like the magic behind that. So now I'm like, ooh, now we have to.
I even have a song for that one. Okay, good.
Oh, the song Northern Lights, which they played in Serendipity.
Yeah.
That is a good song.
Love it.
Ireland has the classic tale of the fox and Brigid. Mm-hmm. And Irish legend claims a gathering group of foxes can be seen as an omen of death.
Oh.
Ooh, you will see, like, it can either be seen, like, the fox is good or bad.
The trickster.
Yes.
Yeah.
In African mythology, the fox is the embodiment of chaos, but also shows up as a messenger to the gods.
Oh, wow.
So, again, it reinforces that good duality. Reinforces that good yet bad or, like, neutral trickster energy. And, of course, you know, early Christians considered foxes to be demonic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I was wondering the whole time that you're saying that, I'm wondering about the fox hunts in Britain, you know, and I'm wondering if that ties into them thinking they were evil or something.
Yeah. I was going to say, you will see that they were considered evil. They were in bed with the devil, that kind of thing, kind of like the snake or the cat, or I don't know. Maybe let's get into it. This did open the door
for many more.
This animal had so much, and then just animals in general. I am obviously feeling called to, cause I'm missing my animal friend. I do feel like I want animal energy.
He has chaotic. He had chaotic energy.
Oh, he was he definitely had fox energy, and so does October. Tell me she does not. Oh, Jake looked at her because he helped me with my research, and he was like, oh my God, she's a little fox. And I was like, she is. She's so mischievous.
And that's part of her color palette too.
That's what I mean. It definitely fits cute. Okay. We have really just, I don't know. We've connected so many dogs this year. It gives me chills.
Yeah.
I don't know. The universe is universing.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Today, foxes are still seen as a symbol for cunningness, trickery, cleverness, playfulness, and resourcefulness, which you'll see in this movie. Mm-hmm. I like.
Yeah.
And you're still going to see them playing the same like role in today's stories or pop culture. So like Swiper the Fox from Dora the Explorer, The Fox and the Hound.
Of course.
Zootopia. I believe the main character is the fox. Lots of anime, and they will always kind of have this personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
If foxes appear to you in dreams, like you mentioned, or otherwise, if you just are connected to the fox, they may be warning you of deception in your midst. So be careful who you trust.
A trickster. Ooh,
yep. If you dream of playing with foxes, you may be flying too close to the sun or like playing in dangerous waters.
Okay.
So be careful.
Right.
If the visit feels more positive in nature, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See the vibe.
Yeah, you're getting a good vibe.
Yeah, the fox may be telling you to tap into your cleverness and get through your challenges just as a fox would, with a little slyness and silliness.
Yeah.
And be resourceful.
Resourceful,
Regardless, call on the fox when you need to be quick on your feet and adaptable, all while remaining true to yourself.
I love that.
I love that lesson.
Oh, I love that.
And definitely recommend the movie. 10 out of 10.
That's awesome. I really liked learning that mythology and the movie. When you said you were doing it, I had not seen it either.
Did you go watch it?
And I did go watch
it. You didn't tell me.
I made it halfway through and I fell asleep, of course. But, you know.
You were hanging on the edge of your seat when I was saying the plot. You're like, how did it end?
Was Lori sitting? Yes, she was. She must be sleeping.
No, I was going to tell you to watch it because it definitely has your energy to it. And I just think, I don't know, it was very cute.
It was kind
of unlike anything I had ever seen.
Yeah, I was surprised we had seen it with your love of Roald Dahl.
Yeah, but I feel like stuff finds you when you need it. And this did just give me like a very warm feeling that I, you know, very much needed. So would you like some fun and random facts about the movie? Okay, Wes Anderson had a strong connection to Dahl's book, very much like me. He, like, Roald Dahl was one of his idols,
favorites,
I think. This was the first book that he ever owned, he says.
Really?
And it remains on his bookshelf to this day.
Oh, wow, nice.
Cute. The book used for the title card, so the very opening scene you see like a copy of the book, is a recreation of this exact edition that Anderson had.
Oh, cool. I
love little
pretty.
Sentimental details like that. A lot of the film's dialogue was taken straight from the book, but Anderson did add his own ideas as well. So it is like a half and half, it seemed. And a lot of Mr. Fox's mannerisms and wardrobe were modeled after Anderson.
Aww,
like, I guess the suit he wears is very similar. Yeah. So it did feel very like personal. Yeah,
that's
it
lovely. I love when, you know, you watch movies like that.
I think that's a common theme in his. Like,
that's
I think
cool.
that's just his style
that's
of
cool.
filmmaking. The
the look of this movie was inspired by Great Missenden, village in Buckinghamshire, England, where Roald Dahl lived and worked. I think there's a museum there now.
I think so.
I really want to go. I don't know why my voice just sounded twangy. I want to go there now.
We're going there when we look for the Cottingley fairies.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. Just make it a little
European tour.
Yes. Anderson and co-writer Noah Baumbach did a lot of their writing at Roald Dahl's family home, which they referred to as the Gypsy House, their words, not mine, in Buckinghamshire. Mm-hmm. Is that where the museum is? It might be. I don't know. Don't quote me. I'll try to link it.
Yeah.
There are lots of little nods to Dahl all throughout the movie. Like, I couldn't even name them all. Right. It's fun to go and find them. Mm-hmm. But one example, at one point, Mr. Fox can be seen sitting in an armchair with a board, like, going across his lap, laying on the armrests. And he uses it as, like, a table or a desk. Uh-huh. This is a nod to Dahl, who supposedly wrote his stories the same way.
Oh, cool.
And I did see that I think his setup is in the museum. Wherever this museum is, it's there.
Very cool.
Speaking of color palettes, the primary color scheme for this film is autumnal.
Yes.
So browns, yellows, oranges, very warm and earthy. Oh my God. November. There are almost no cooler colors used. So blues, no greens, no purples, with the exception of Christofferson's blue wardrobe, which was intentional to make him kind of like appear different from the rest.
Right.
I love that.
It was very cool.
That's just scratches the itch. The color palette
was gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Wes Anderson had the actors record their lines outside and on location to increase the
increase.
Thank you. Yes. The naturalness. So you could go and look at videos and you can see like George Clooney doing it. So he said, quote unquote, we went out in a forest, went in an attic, went into a stable. That's underground for some things. There was a great spontaneity in the recordings because of that. There's that like Sagittarius energy that I was talking about, but you can feel it. You can feel that it was like outside.
Yeah.
It feels like it was outside. I love that.
I really liked it.
CGI was only used for one scene. Still my heart.
Wow.
The rest was stop motion, composed of over 55,000 shots and using over 500 puppets.
Wow.
Ugh, the dedication.
So long to
that
make.
Just is like,
I love
that so much. The specific style of stop motion, like kind of the way the puppets moved and like how slow they moved, was supposedly an homage to the classic Rankin and Bass holiday specials.
Oh, again, you're just talking my language. Yes.
And there are actually a few songs featured in the film sung by Burl Ives, who was the voice of Sam the Snowman and Rudolph.
So
there's
cute.
Those personal touches.
Wow, I love that.
That even if you don't immediately know exactly, you can feel.
Yeah, that's one that you're going to watch over and over and start just like gathering those little Easter eggs.
And you can just feel how like personal it is. I don't know. I really liked it.
I love that.
Talk about maybe a little too personal. Mm. Okay, the human character's hair on the dolls was actual human hair.
Yikes.
It was collected from studio employees at the puppet factory.
I was like, did Wes donate his hair? Is he making even more
personal?
Take
some from my bob. Let the bob live in infamy. But can you imagine like watching the movie and being like, I bet that's my mop on there.
That's my hair.
Yikes.
Wow.
And my last fact, Fantastic Mr. Fox lost both of the Oscars for which it was nominated to Pixar's. There's that twang again. I am from Pennsylvania. To Pixar's Up in 2009. I don't know why I left it on a sad note. My bad.
Yeah, wow. Way to bring it down.
I liked this better than Up.
Yeah.
So there's my 2 cents.
I haven't seen that one either, so.
Oh, devastating.
Oh.
Within the first 2 seconds, you're going to be crying a son
of
a bitch.
Probably why I haven't seen it then.
Stay away from that one.
Okay.
Go to this one.
Gotcha.
We heard from a lot of people. I think a lot of our patrons even messaged in and said their kids really love this movie.
Oh,
so if you have like younger kids or even teens, I think this is a really cute. Yes.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, and it has.
I saw all of it.
What I saw.
I got about halfway through.
I was going to say, I heard you fucking snoring. You're going to be telling me you were watching this.
Rumble in the house.
But But that is fantastic, Mr. Fox.
I love it.
Yay.
Awesome. That was great. Thank you for sharing that.
And thank you to our listeners for recommending that one, because this isn't one that would have like came up naturally for me, weirdly. Yeah. But thank you.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing the mythology. I really found that exciting.
You are welcome.
Yes. All right, so that means I'm up.
You're up to bat, Laura.
I am. And you know what? I am so glad that we were able to talk about movies again.
Yeah.
It was a little late because last year, so this one was also recommended by listeners.
It was, and I didn't know about it.
I had never heard of it. Mm-mm. And it came to me after, like, Samhain.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of autumnal in that way, but we see Halloween represented in this. And so when...
We don't want to let go.
We don't want to let go. No, but so when that, you know, when that... holiday came around, I was like, oh, what a bummer, because I really wanted
you
to do this.
You keep telling me, you're like, I really wish I could talk about this.
Yes, I really, I'm thank you to everybody that recommended this. It was, I really liked it. So it's a 2013 American fantasy film.
Cute, that's the year me and Jake got together.
Yeah.
I love that year.
Yeah. It's directed by Maggie Greenwald.
Okay.
A screenplay by Peter Hutchings and Christina Menger.
Mm-hmm.
And story by Claude Dahl Farah.
Okay, love that name.
There was no budget or box office info. There are no pretty much fun facts. This is one.
It's like a Hallmark movie. I'm not trying to.
It's not Hallmark, but it kind of reads like that.
Okay, got it.
It's very cheesy. The cheese is high.
You know what? I love some cheese.
There, you know, again, it's not. It wasn't great.
Okay.
It wasn't great.
Right.
Like Practical Magic, which you see a lot of like similarities in there.
Okay, got it.
So it wasn't great. You could see it lending from many different magical movies. It lives in the same world. And for me, it was like so touching because it reminds us of our little family.
Oh man, I didn't think I was gonna cry today.
No, I don't think you will, but it's just like very reminiscent of our little insular family here.
Okay.
All right, so I'm excited. Here's your cast.
Okay.
You had me at Aidan Quinn.
You love Aidan Quinn.
I love him. As John Carver.
Okay.
We have Virginia Madsen as Abigail Carver. Zosia Mamet, hopefully I said that right, as Rhea Carver.
Okay.
Olympia Dukakis as Rosemary Carver. So this is like a stacked cast. She's like an older actress, but she's like very renowned.
Okay, nice.
Sam Underwood as Oliver Sands. Ji Young Han as Nika. Nate Wolf as Simon. And Josh Bowman as Taylor.
Okay, seems like a pretty good cast.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty stacked cast.
Yeah.
All right, so we begin with a good old-fashioned witch burning of the past, all right?
Okay.
So that's just letting us know that this movie is about witches.
Hey, you know what I mean? We're here. Here we are.
We see this little girl of about maybe 4 or 5 years old. She's observing.
Okay.
Okay. She is in this jewel-toned blue taffeta dress.
Okay.
And the worst platinum blonde wig I have ever seen.
You know what? We hate a terrible wig. We hate, like... You know what? Is it worth it?
I mean,
let me ask you this question, movie makers. Is the terrible wig worth it? We all see it.
I think the point was that she was a child, but she was wise beyond her years. I think that's what they were trying to, you know, get across.
A wig says many things.
She was magical.
I am wise.
Platinum blonde. I am wise. Wise beyond my years.
You know what? I'm there. All right.
A crow flies and we cut to modern day.
Okay.
The morning alarm sounds to awaken high school student Rhea.
Mm-hmm.
Her bedroom is pretty cool and funky.
I like the name Rhea. Yes, pretty.
It is pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandma is outside creating art with a blowtorch.
Okay, you know what? Love it, Grams.
Don't you? While dad sits in his canoe reading a book and drinking his morning cup of
That's a very Jake thing to do. Jake would definitely sit in a canoe just to let... Okay.
Mom is in the kitchen casting a spell with her herbs.
Aww.
And as cheesy as this movie is... I'm hooked, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of hooked already, too. This is cute.
The kitchen is gorgeous.
Ooh, do we have some kitchen witches?
All the jars of preserved foods, like canned foods.
Jams and jellies.
The herbs hanging in the window. And it is the coolest house ever. It's like what I imagine us having. It's like out in the woods. It's kind of like log cabin-ish.
Where does it take place?
It doesn't really say, I don't think, but it is filmed in my one and only fun fact. It is filmed in Woodstock, New York.
No shit.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, fun.
Yep.
Okay.
So Rhea comes down to the kitchen in her dress that she handmade out of recycled trash bags.
Okay, Rhea, yes.
Right. And
DIY queen.
Again, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, she does not fit in school and finds herself at the center of ridicule and bullying. So you see the premise is a little, you know.
Got it.
We've seen it
standard,
before.
Sure.
Standard, yeah. She has one sidekick friend who also does not blend in.
Right.
She sits in English class.
Lord doesn't know it.
I don't know how to use English.
Lord needs to go to.
I need to go back
to. Me as well. Why am I trying to
roast you? I need to go back to English
class. I'm the worst offender.
It appears she has caught the attention of Oliver.
Ooh.
Who pours out his admiration of Rhea by reading an original poem out loud to the class.
Okay, you know what? It is an approach.
That he wrote all about
her. It is an approach.
Rhea, your hair. It's like, I mean, it's
shooting for the stars. It's very, how very Josie Grossy of you.
She's mortified. And this only fuels the jokes at her expense,
Got
of course.
It. Okay.
Her dad owns the art store in town, of course.
Okay, this is
of course
so
he
cute.
Does. In his style, his clothes.
Do we love him?
Aidan Quinn, come on. The cool patterns on his shirts, the jewelry. He has like some turquoise jewelry.
Is he like the male Miss Frizzle? I feel okay. A hoop earring. Did you say a hoop earring? Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to breeze past that. I really do got to get
cool.
Jake a hoop
He's
earring.
Cool as shit.
I love it.
She stops by in a mood because school sucks.
Okay.
And asks her dad, when is he going to remove the ugly painting that has been hanging on the wall since she was 12?
Why do you got
to
roast
it? And he replies, when it sells.
Okay.
Rhea tells him that she does not fit in school and they all call her a freak. And you know what he says?
What?
I like this. He says, well, I'm a freak.
Yeah.
Your mom is definitely freaky.
Oh.
Which makes you freaky.
By nature, and you're going to be freaky,
says,
girl.
Fly your freak flag, Rhea.
Yeah.
Yes.
Be that super freak. You know what?
Right.
I like this.
That's right.
Yes.
So throughout the movie, she keeps getting random glimpses of this girl in the bad wig, right? But then she disappears.
Okay.
And wig. She's not disturbed by it in any way. She's just like,
I'm disturbed by the wig and I haven't even seen it.
After school, she heads up to the art studio in the house, of course.
Okay.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
Where Rhea, mom, and Graham, you know, they all create art.
I love this.
Ray and mom are on like separate wavelengths and they're butting heads frequently.
Okay.
So as the family prepares to celebrate the Sabbath,
okay,
I gather that Grams and moms have powers.
Okay.
And Rhea is coming into hers.
Got it.
However, she has no idea that anyone has powers, nor herself.
Okay, you
she
know
She just
what?
Thinks that they like worship
they're
the
They're just like
you
a
know,
little
they
spunky.
Worship the goddess.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, they do the Sabbats. And we know this because Granny lights candles without using matches.
Okay, practical right? magic.
And it's apparently hush-hush. Rhea. They don't want her to know.
Okay,
right
but like
now.
Maybe it would help the girl out. You know what I mean?
Correct. An argument that Grams has with mom, but mom is laying it down.
It is giving Halloween Town and Gwen the wet blanket.
Yes.
Mom.
It's pulling from
up.
Several movies, yeah. right? But they're all dressed up in their red robes. And this was beautiful. And you want to talk about, well, not the red robe, but this scene. They go out into nature. They have their beautiful garlands in their head. Mm. And they go out with their baskets and gather some of the autumnal colors.
Okay, Lord.
And it's like the scenery is beautiful.
Yeah.
The cinematography, great. It's just so nature-y. They perform their ritual to enter the dark half of the year and say, may the light of the sun illuminate our hearts.
Illuminate that shit.
Then they sit down to a beautiful feast in which Rhea.
I'm hungry.
I know.
Side note.
I'm hungry.
Love a beautiful feast.
Rhea decides to tell the fam that she doesn't want to stay in this one horse town and keep learning the family ways. She wants to go to college far, far away. Right?
It's classic.
Mom is not down with this
right.
and wants to keep their little family insular as it has proven throughout history that people are not tolerant of their ways.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
So to change the subject, Dad intercedes by telling Rhea that her painting sold.
Papa.
To a nice young man named Oliver. At school the next day, she tells him to
Can
stop.
Can we call him Ollie?
Ollie.
I love it.
I think that's great.
Okay.
She tells Ollie to stop stalking her and give,
and give Ollie, fuck off.
And give back the painting.
Yeah.
He agrees to drop it off at their house after school.
Okay.
As Rhea awaits his arrival, she plays with her cute little goats and they are so cute.
She has goats?
Yes.
You know I want some goats.
While Dad wrestles in the herb gardens and the vegetable gardens with their like raised beds. Oh, God.
This
beautiful.
Is like, if you were to
it's
ask,
my dream.
If you were to ask me, Laura and Jake, what our dream
yes,
was.
This is it.
Just go and look at this
and that's
movie,
what I,
essentially.
After I watched this, I was like, you really need to watch
I need
this
to watch
with
it.
Me.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. But anyway, the squash crops are failing.
Okay, Laura got so.
You know, that root
Laura,
vegetable.
Not the root veggies.
The autumnal.
We know how important these root veggies are
That's right.
to a Sabbat.
Anyway, it seems there was a drought and the plants are pretty much dead.
Okay.
Rhea digs in, to help Dad. Mm-hmm. Oliver returns the painting and tells Rhea that he likes her birdhouses made out of trash.
He's really
you know what?
I like your shit trash fucking birdhouses. Please, would you pay attention to me?
And you know what? She's like, she did.
Good.
She's like, the sparks are starting to fly.
He is trying real hard. God.
Maybe she will give him a chance after
Thank
all.
Thank God. Who else is going to like your trash birdhouse? Fuck. No one's gem when
she's
you
hoping
one.
The popular boy. You know, in school.
Rhea.
Because, you know, again.
Give me a break. Give me a break.
Storyline. Anyway, the next day after school, she takes Ollie out to her most sacred place, full of beautiful nature and a gazebo for her to stand upon and look out at.
You had me until you said gazebo.
Gazebo. Made out of sticks and twigs.
Okay.
There is an awkward silence and an even more awkward lip lock.
Oh, I hate it.
All right. Dad heads out to the garden and about shits his pants when it is full of ready for the picking squashes.
Ooh.
Rhea, he determines, must have the gift of the elements.
Is she a little earth element? What's
but
going
that
on?
That is impossible.
Why?
Because there are only three gifts.
Okay.
The elements, prophecy, and healing.
Hmm.
Sound a little charmed-like?
Okay, yeah.
And only one person can have a particular gift at any given time. And we already know.
Like in the family line?
Yes.
Okay.
We already know Granny has the power of the elements because she lit the candles.
Oh, she lit the... Oh, yes. Okay. I'm there.
Mom, we determined through her horrible...
She's healing.
Her horrible nightmares of Leia. Oh, okay. Of Rhea lying bloody in a ditch.
Okay, great.
Has the gift of sight.
Very me.
Yes, that's your gift.
Lee Core. Yep.
So Rhea should have the gift of healing. When she comes into her powers, unless Granny says the prophecy is coming to fruition.
What prophecy?
There will be one that has all three powers.
Oh my God.
It has been foretold. It's been foretold.
Get ready to carry that burden, girl.
Girl. When Rhea, with the help of Ollie, creates this weird sculpture. Now, this part was like kind of confusing. I get it, but I kind of don't get it. Explain it very well. She's artsy, and she found these tree stumps that had been pulled up through the storm or something. And she decides to create these sculptures and then move them. I'm thinking it was very like Stonehenge-y looking. So okay. I'm thinking she was trying to create something for her family. It was a little confusing.
You know what? Creative. I love it.
So Ollie puts them down for her on this big truck.
Okay, the stumps.
Like, as he moved them because they were huge.
Was it like maybe just they needed to show Ollie's like muscles or something? Did he look like...
he didn't lift the stumps because they were huge. They had to be craned down. They had to be craned down to the ground.
Shit. I thought maybe it was
But he did help her. Okay, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But then she ends up like a typical... You know,
this is a high school student orchestrating the removal of stumps.
Yeah,
via
works for his dad. And that's what they do.
Okay.
She decides that she doesn't like where Ollie put the stumps. And so she needs them moved, but the truck is already gone. And then you know what? She moves them with her mind.
Oh my God. How about the power to kill a yak from 200 yards away? Dude, I found the sickest Tenacious D shirt
flea market.
We went to like a flea market the other day. Fucking, it's so good. Okay,
awesome.
Anyway.
Anyway, neither she nor Ollie seem to find it weird that she moved these humongous stumps with her mind. After she shows the fam her creation.
Look what I made.
Look
at my stump art.
apparently it had some mystical... Anyway, they realize that it's time to fess up to the history of the family.
Yeah.
Her powers and the prophecy.
Can't be denied after that masterpiece.
They like lead her to this like secret room, where they keep all the artifacts.
Okay.
And they show her this old painting.
Okay.
Of a little girl with a platinum do. And she's going to heal the world.
Look at this wig. You have no idea the power it holds.
And she is going to be born of the person who has all three powers.
He's going to be born of the... Wait. Mm-hmm. Is Rhea Preggs? I'm so confused.
This is down the line.
Base?
So the prophecy comes to fruition when one member in the line has all three powers, and that member is going to eventually have the child that will heal the world.
Okay, no big deal. No big fucking deal.
No pressure.
Okay, got
no
it.
No pressure.
It's a lot to put on Rhea's shoulders. Okay,
yes.
She's young.
Right. yeah, how does Rhea feel about this?
I don't know.
She says, oh, I've been seeing this gal. Dun, dun, dun. So they realize that she must.
I've seen that wig before.
It must be her. She's not sure if she wants this power, but she's willing to give it a go.
Okay.
So speed round wrap up.
Okay.
Okay. In a sad turn of events, poor Ollie.
Oh, no.
In a sad attempt to defend Rhea from her taunters, the popular kids in school.
Okay.
Outs her as a witch.
Okay. Ollie.
Ollie.
Hey, bud, you had smart. One job.
And the next night when the family and Ollie are sitting down to a sound celebration.
Oh, boy.
The taunters burn an effigy of a witch on their front lawn.
Okay.
Along with killing Rhea's little goat. Damn.
Why the fuck would you, Laura, you know what? Here's, you know what you could have done? You could have left out the goat entirely. No, I did not need to know about the goat.
You know what? I have to bring that in. You know why?
No.
Here's why. Because of course, she tells Oliver, she tells Ollie to hit the bricks.
Because right? of the goat killing.
No, because he outed her as a witch.
Which resulted in the death of her goat.
But then she decides that she just wants to be normal and be in the in crowd with the very people.
That killed her goat.
That killed the damn goat.
I'm confused. Don't know if I like this girl. I'm getting like Rory Gilmore energy and I don't know if I like it.
All right. So she tosses off her garbage bag dress and puts on something sultry. And of course, grabs the attention of popular lunkhead Taylor.
Yeah, of course, because she took off the fucking trash bag.
They all go to a boozy party, which gets busted. And so she decides, hey, I want to be cool. I'll take you to my sacred place and we could party there, right?
Okay.
Of course, they totally disrespect the land and litter it up. And then she has this epiphany. Hey, I don't think these are my people.
Oh my God. Right? Okay.
And they're not and they're not really cool. Hey,
you
that's been done before.
Say.
As they leave, a drunken Taylor speeds in his muscle car and wrecks, leaving everyone half dead.
Oh my God. Yeah. Laura, okay, you're taking me on. This is very soap opera-y.
Dude, right?
It is.
Do not worry though.
Okay.
Because Rhea
has the power to heal.
Through her power of healing.
There she goes.
Brings them all back from the brink.
She goes.
They're all just standing there like, what just happened?
I don't know if I would have had the strength. These people seem like assholes. Like, no, I'm just
going to leave you. I'm going to leave you.
At least for a sec so you can think about what you've done. I'm just kidding.
She reunites with Oliver and her family, embraces her witchy power and her quest to bring the prophecy to fruition eventually.
Okay, eventually.
Eventually.
So her and Ollie are going to have this magical child.
So.
Is that what's got it.
Bearing the blue velvet taffeta platinum wig wearing healer of the world.
I'm going to need you to say that sentence one more time.
Bearing the blue velvet taffeta platinum wig wearing healer of the world. TM.
Sounds like a musical that I would love to be a part of. It really does. Okay. Is that the end?
That's the end.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to give that a 9.5 out of 10 because it seemed as though there were some...
The cheese was high. And some questionable storylines.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And predictable.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But you know what? It did sound like a fun time.
You know, just the scenery and just the whole...
Yeah.
Like underlying vibe, I was digging it.
I was going to say, if you like the practical magic.
Well, I was going to say, my only fun fact after the Woodstock was that Aidan Quinn, second movie revolving magic.
Yeah.
Because he was in Practical Magic.
I wish for you too. I'm a little rusty. It's been a while. I'm going to go cheap for red. I'll come back and do that a little better.
Oh my goodness. So as I'm looking through this, it's one of those movies that of course is like 100% magical every which way, but
could have been
loose,
a
right?
Right.
But there are a lot of topics that we've already talked about. And then I thought, well, you know what? To me, this movie was really about the three phases. You know, the daughter, the mother, the grandmother.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
Okay, cute.
And so to me, that exemplifies the triple goddess. And then I realized,
we have talked
so much about goddesses, but we have not talked about the triple goddess.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Or bad. Let's break that
rule. Of course, this is just opening the door because this is a deep, deep lesson with tons of information. So we're going to just...
This is like one of those episodes where we both kind of like introed something that can go way deeper. I like it. Ooh, Laura, I'm getting the chills.
Yeah. Okay. It's so cool. I learned a lot of things that I did not know.
Tell me.
So we've gone through the Wheel of the Year and we've discussed witches' Sabbats, and many of these festivals revolve around paying tribute to the god or goddess, right?
Right.
We've tossed around the triple goddess and the power of three and the maid, the mother, and the crone.
Yes.
For the last 3 years, right?
Yeah.
But the idea of gods and goddesses in a three form dates back to ancient civilization.
Okay.
So, for example, take the Celtic goddess Brigid, who you've just talked about. She was the ruler over three important skills.
Got it.
Healing, poetry, and smithcraft, or blacksmithing.
Like, similar to the three powers in this movie kind of thing. Okay.
Or the goddess of Greek mythology, Hera, who took on three different roles, the girl, the woman, the widow.
Okay, there you go, Greek mythology. There you got me again. There
you go. But although these ancient mythologies most certainly acted as inspiration, the concept that we know today as the triple goddess was first introduced by English author Robert Graves in 1948.
Really?
Yes. In his book entitled The White Goddess, A Historical Grammar of Poetic Myth. The book centered around goddess worship from a poetic perspective, not historical fact.
Okay.
And basically what he did was take a bunch of mythological figures.
Got it.
Put them in a pot.
Love it.
Stir it all around.
Okay.
And created an archetype of the triple goddess.
Got it.
A one standalone. So she encompassed one.
That anyone could maybe relate to.
One goddess, one power.
Got it. You know what I mean? I see.
Okay. So he creates this archetype of the triple goddess to represent, like, one goddess to represent the divine feminine.
Okay.
Okay.
Mac Miller. Okay.
All right, Mac Miller. Yeah. It was Graves' opinion that the monotheistic patriarchal religion, so that means like one god religions, mostly male dominated, of the day were the downfall of the white goddess and thus the direct result of much of the world's woes.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
Got it.
I wonder if the platinum wig represented the white goddess.
You know what, Laura? I love that. I knew. I told you it held power. I knew that that symbol was, you know what, the power of a wig. That should have been your lesson.
That's just the power of the platinum wig. All right. So Graves took up the pen around the same time that Gerald Gardner and followers began their practice.
Got it.
That eventually became known as Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
And although Gardner himself did not embrace the triple goddess, many other witches of the time were digging what Graves was putting down, specifically one Robert Cochran, who is credited with bringing her into the fold of modern witchcraft movement.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Talk about connecting dots.
Yes. So to be fair, other earlier writers of the day, like Aleister Crowley and Sigmund Freud, were also describing triple goddesses, but in a different way.
I was going to say, if you need context, like I do know we have some newer listeners. You've talked about Gerald Gardner and you've talked about
Aleister Crowley.
Yes. So if you need,
you can go back.
It does all kind of, it's like a web.
Yes, exactly. Graves' research was eventually discredited.
Okay.
But his concept of the all-encompassing one would later become known as the matriarchal religion, popularized in the feminist theology of the 1970s.
Okay,
so that's where we're really seeing this. We're seeing this renaissance into feminism and the environment, and the 1970s comes up a lot.
Yeah.
In addition, it wouldn't be until the 1970s that the concept that we know today as the triple goddess, the maiden, the mother, and the crone would cement itself deeply into the Wiccan tradition.
No shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like not surprising, but also is surprising. Yeah,
exactly. So no longer a single goddess under many names, but three separate deities.
Got it. Okay. Take a drink every time I say got it.
Ooh, got
but
it.
But you are, it's kind of my light bulb is.
Is it going off?
Yes.
Yeah. I tried to chunk it down. It was a lot of information.
I'm getting it.
I'm like, whoa, mind blown.
Yeah.
All right. So many times people assume that the aspect of the triple goddess pertains to them as like a phase of life they're in. Oh, I'm young and single. I must align with the maiden, or I just had kids. I'm the mother. Or for me, myself, you know, I'm in the crone stage of life.
The old spinster.
And, you know, and they focus on that aspect of of the goddess.
Okay.
But that's not the case.
Okay.
Yes, we can weave reverence into each aspect at many different times in our lives, which is really interesting. And I think that's going to open up a whole lot of possibilities. So each incarnation would be associated with a particular season and human characteristics, each being associated with a different phase of the moon or a Sabbath celebration, determining which aspect you might call upon during your magical practices.
Whoa, Lore.
Yeah, right?
I love this.
Yes. Whoa. All right, so let's start with the maiden.
Okay.
Okay, in her incarnations, she could be known as Artemis, Persephone, Brigid, Bastet, Hathor, Diana, Rhiannon, or Freya.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
She is represented by the waxing phase of the moon, mm-hmm. which means growth mm-hmm. as the waxing moon moves towards fullness.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So outwardly, she is the vision of youth, uh-huh. innocence, independence, and self-confidence.
Okay.
Naivete.
Naivete.
Which we can see represented in this movie.
Okay, right. Right? Yeah.
But we call on this aspect of the triple goddess when making a fresh start, starting a new project or job, or exploring new exploring new possibilities for your life.
I love that.
Discovering new things or learning to express yourself. Mm. You would call on her.
Okay.
She is associated with the dawn, sunrise, and the seasons of late winter and spring.
I knew you were going to say the spring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
The Sabbats associated with the maiden are Imbolc, Ostara, and Beltane.
Okay. That's so interesting not to like, but, you know, I'm putting it in my lens. Yeah. That is probably the goddess I feel the least connected to.
Yeah.
Like, I have a hard time connecting to, like, the youthful side of myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to you need work to with that goddess.
Absolutely. Okay. I think you should. In pop culture, the Western patriarchal stereotypes for the maiden are still often what's presented or represented.
Sure.
Like that damsel in distress, in need of rescue by Prince Charming on his white horse. So think of Disney's Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So then let's move on to the mother.
Okay.
All right. You may call her Demeter, Isis, Gaia, Frigg, Selene, Danu, or Ceres, or maybe even Parvati. Janice from The Sopranos.
Stop it. I knew you were going to say it. Ooh, I got the chills when you were saying, I feel very tapped into this right now.
Okay. Yeah. Of course you do.
Of course. Right.
So is represented by the full moon phase, which gives life to all of the abundance found on Earth.
Beautiful.
Everything is in full bloom and fruiting, and animals are entering their maturity.
Mm-hmm.
This aspect is associated with enjoying the fullness of life, nurturing yourself and others, and the responsibility of being an adult.
Oh, that last one stung.
Yes.
You didn't have to slip that last one in there.
This aspect is considered to be the most powerful in Wiccan circles.
Okay.
The mother goddess archetype is the inspiration behind Gerald Gardner's vision of the divine feminine.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So you can call on this aspect of the triple goddess when it is time to manifest or create something in your life.
Ooh.
Her time is midday and her season is summer. Her Sabbats are Lunazah and Mabon.
Okay, and you know what? I love that Mabon.
I know.
Ooh, I liked that.
So she's most often stereotypically portrayed in pop culture as frumpy, matronly, and adored by her family unit. But often has nothing more to offer than her motherly duties.
Ouch, okay.
So a good example that I read was Mrs. Weasley from Harry Potter is a good example.
I mean, I fuck with Mrs. Weasley.
Mrs. Weasley's the shit. But
how dare you call Mrs. Weasley frumpy?
Right, but only in regards to her family is she like badass. Like she's the mama bear.
She is,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, I got it.
So interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move to the crone.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So the aspect that gets the bad rap
is
typically associated with death.
Sure.
And goddesses of the underworld. Mm-hmm. So you may call her Hecate, Kali, Kerwidian, Morrigan, Hel, or Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga. yeah, so we're talking this time of year.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. She's represented by the waning moon when darkness falls in the night sky. Outwardly, she represents post-childbearing years.
Got it.
She is the wise woman aspect of the goddess and steps to the forefront to govern aging, endings, death, and rebirth. Guidance, visions,
right,
and prophecy, past lives, and transformations.
I feel like I've been talking to her a lot lately.
Yes. Call on her when your magical work or life need vision and guidance, or you are looking to transform your life from its present state.
Yes. Okay.
She is the most feared aspect of the goddess and is often labeled as a hag.
Okay, no.
Simply because she reminds us that death is indeed a part of life.
We're trying to reclaim the word hag.
I know. Her Sabbats are Samhain and Yule. Mm-hmm. And while you can take any stereotypical depiction of a witch in pop culture and, you know, it exemplifies this aspect of the goddess. But so as we can see through this lesson, the aspects of the goddess are like open and inclusive to all who wish to call on them. It doesn't have
to be in that phase of life.
You don't. Yeah. And you don't. Right. It could be anybody.
I like knew that, but didn't.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you
just kind of like chunk it into.
Yeah, but like I said, I feel like I've been talking to the like I know that that's not that it doesn't need to be separate, but like you kind of it is kind of packaged like that.
Yes, when
you,
exactly.
Yeah, when you read about it. Okay, thank you for breaking that down.
Isn't that
very appreciative of that. Yes.
Yeah, so we can call on them whenever we feel inclined to and weave them in and out of our magic. Maybe you're talking to two, maybe none, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, weave them in and out of your life on whatever occasion you deem necessary, you know.
Wow, I am just loving the lessons that we are bringing to the table this year, especially this back half of the, and some of you have even reached out to us and have said like everything just feels so
like it's flowing
and connecting, and that's just, and it's our third year. That's interesting.
And just think where we can continue to grow.
You
know what I mean? There's so much more. Like I said, we're tapping into these lessons and they're so immense.
They are, but
they warrant more research.
Yeah, I do like that we can keep going. Yeah. But like you said, you might look at this and anyone that it kind of connects to like the witchy side of things might think they know the triple goddess. But I was like, I'm not ashamed to admit this was kind of a new side to that.
Yeah,
but I was like, wait a minute, duh.
Same.
But like, I love it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think people are going to like that one.
Yeah. So, you know, I hope you get to know these goddesses, bring them into your magical practices. And I hope that you enjoyed this lesson because I really learned a lot.
I really like that. And I'm excited to go watch that movie.
Yeah.
So these are two movies today that were like definitely recommendations.
Yes. Thank you so much for those recommendations.
I know, you know, we get a lot of recommendations, so it might take us a while, but if you really want us to talk about something, keep like pestering, because both of these were ones where we were like, okay, people keep saying this, let's do it.
Exactly.
Look at that. This might be one of my new favorite episodes.
There you go. It was
like
great.
Warm and cozy, and I feel like I learned a lot.
Yes.
This is exactly what I needed.
I think so. I think
warmed my heart up a little bit.
Yeah,
I know. Sure. We've heard a lot from people lately that it's rough out there. Yeah. We do know that. So just, you know, hang tight. Take this as like a virtual hug from us.
Yes.
And we'll catch you next week for another one.
We'll catch you next week. TTFN.
Cut, print, check the gate. Moving on.